Welcome to The Grow Show, where we make it easier for entrepreneurs and leaders to grow their businesses. You'll hear from real leaders with real stories about their successes and failures so you don't have to make the same mistakes. We won't break out textbooks or talk theory, only raw stories from the front lines with actionable takeaways.
The Grow Show is sponsored by Heil Sound, world-class microphones for stage, studio, broadcast, and podcast. Find your sound at heilsound.com. Here's the next episode of The Grow Show.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Grow Show. I'm here with my partners in Grow, Scott Scully.
What's up, everyone?
Jeff Winters.
Hey, everybody.
It's been a while since we've been all back in the studio. Scott, we have you back here. Tell us a little bit about your time off. You know, you dropped your daughter off at college, University of Arizona. How was it? Was there some tears?
On my end, there were tears. On her end, there were like, you've outstayed your welcome, Dad. Time to go home.
Time to get out of there.
Yeah. I'm super excited for her. It's an awesome school, and she feels comfortable, and it's just going to be an incredible experience. It was tough, though, dropping the first one off at college, for sure.
Jeff, how about you dropping the first one off at grade school?
We had second grade. We had kindergarten, and today we had preschool. And my wife, you know, like everybody, they do. You do the thing where you stand in front of the door and you hold like a piece of paper, or in our case, a pre-made chalkboard. And it's like, I am such and such years old. My teacher is Miss Mary. And then she included this year, when I grow up, I want to be, which I thought was clever. Like my oldest son's like, a baseball player. And my preschooler said, he wants to be a pancake mix.
Who wouldn't want
mixer it? Or just mix?
No, he wants to be the
he wants to like, be the mix.
He just so clearly like he was just doing like it. They made pancakes for breakfast and he just said, I think she needs to. Again, my wife does more than words could possibly say, but I do think we need to do a little better job filtering the answers of the preschooler on what they want to be when they grow up. Because he's not going to be, I got bad news. Like my middle son's got a better chance of being an all-star baseball player than my youngest does of being pancake mix.
And we had him on the podcast Friday.
Yeah.
That was a treat. That was a treat. Fun. Disagree. Yeah. Where do you get that from? Is that from you?
I don't know. I know my two oldest kids, Eric was very nice. We had him come sit on the podcast, and all my second grader wanted to say afterwards is, when is it coming out on Spotify? And he's so mad that it's not going to be on Spotify.
So my niece and my nephew did the same thing with the chalkboard. And my niece is like the angel, like perfect kid. And she put teacher, of course. Like she's going to be a middle school teacher.
Mm. Smart.
The best teacher ever.
Smart.
My nephew put Chick-fil-A worker. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But I wanted to bring it up because we've been using Chick-fil-A as like an example of a business that's just run so efficiently. Like you didn't have people saying like they wanted to work at McDonald's. You got people that are striving to work at Chick-fil-A.
They make great money.
Treat
them well.
They're always happy. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah. And the food tastes good.
Food tastes really good.
Really good.
I was at Chick-fil-A on Saturday. We went in to order, and there was a young man behind the counter. And I said, I got to ask. I hope I'm not being rude. Feel free not to answer. How old are you? He goes, 14. I was like, you're hired. Like, I will right now advance hire you.
Isn't that illegal?
For whenever you're ready.
Isn't that illegal?
Shout out if it's illegal. Maybe you said 50. Whatever the legal
age
was.
That's their secret. They get them in there at 14.
I would have hired this kid tomorrow.
What do you think? What's the secret for Chick-fil-A on why they're so good?
Oh. You know, there's a lot of things. I think it's got to be in their onboarding.
I think it might be.
I think they have to bring people in the right way. And that's actually the topic for today. And to start out, we have some exciting news. Shared this with the leadership team on Monday. We won an award, mm-hmm. An onboarding training award. Big, big deal. Brandon Hall Group, HCM Excellence Group Award, which is Human Capital Management. So Abstract actually won it with our onboarding training. So little background on the award. To win the award, we had to submit our entire onboarding process And then we had to do a 2-hour video explaining and walking through the process and the content and how we measure success and the effectiveness. So they're looking at, did it fit the needs of the business? What was the design and how did you deliver it? What's the engagement throughout the process? What are the measurable benefits of the program? And then overall training. And we were a silver award winner. And just to name some of the other companies that were in this, some of them are kind of a big deal. Salesforce. Have you heard of that one?
It's a software company.
Yeah, I think it's a software company. Deloitte. You heard of that one?
Wee.
Equifax. That's a big one. Airbnb. American or Delta Airlines, Pepsi, Microsoft, Verizon. This is a big deal. And good, what's cool about it?
Good company.
And to establish some credibility for this training is we were, if not the only one, one of two or three only privately held companies on this list, and the only one that doesn't use outside training in their onboarding. We do it entirely in-house. So what we felt would be, kudos first off to Jessica Rintel, our VP of training.
Nice job.
Ian Sweer, Michaela Gilligan, Kelsey Chitwood, Ina Taylor, our whole training team, and anyone that's ever been a part of that. They put a lot of work into this, and this was a huge, huge deal for them. Before today, we thought it would be important to talk about, your business, no matter the scale, how do you put together an incredible onboarding for any individual that comes into your business? And then how does that establish the foundation for all of your ongoing training? So Scott, one thing I wanted to talk about with you first, because you had a huge, we sat in a conference room 2.5 years ago and we literally were lining out the training with our training team and going through that. And you put a huge importance of having different executives across the company, including yourself, come and meet with that training class right off the bat, talking about the history of abstract. A lot of people think onboarding, I just need to teach them how to do the job. But you really saw the importance of bringing everything else to the table. Could you talk a little bit about that and why that's so important and why you like meeting with the class yourself and the value in that?
Yeah, well, first of all, the market's competitive. People have other options, and I just genuinely appreciate the fact that they picked abstract as a career choice, and they want to grow with us. It's a really, really big deal, and I want to acknowledge them for that. I love to hear a little bit about where they came from and what they want out of their experience, and then we open it up and just talk about whatever they want to talk about. They ask questions about me, the company, where we're growing, things like that. And I just think it's a nice first step, right, to connect with the people that are on the front lines that are doing the important work that cause us to grow, period. As far as training goes, us, top across the whole team, we always need to continue to develop. That's why we made it an important piece of our culture where everybody gets at least an hour every week of ongoing professional development. So not only is it important for us in our onboarding to bring people on the right way, but we want to make sure that people are always thinking that they're growing, growing their knowledge base, whether it's about their job, business in general, or just in life. If we're helping fuel the fire, they're more powerful in their lives, and our company's in a better spot. Makes people feel better, helps retain really good team members if they always feel like they're continuously getting better. Helps our recruiting process when we can talk about the amount of training that we're doing. This is another one of those topics. I know that we always say that, but making sure that you're offering really good onboarding and then continuous training and development, you're just going to be a better organization because of it. We've seen it.
Yeah.
Proven it.
I think it's very easy to overlook onboarding. And I think the reason that it's easy to overlook onboarding is because it's very rarely identified as the root cause for why people leave, but it often is. So let me unpack that. When people onboard at your company, that is when they are at their happiest. Like when you start a new job, that's the best day ever. You could give me the dumpiest onboarding for a couple of weeks. And I'm still telling everybody on LinkedIn, all my friends, all my family, like, this new job, it's awesome. It's amazing. Even if you're literally watching training videos all day. And so what happens is you get people who are in the onboarding phase who are not really onboarding, but they're just so happy, like the happiness is just taking them through and they're liking it. And then they get to a point where they start their actual job and they're not winning.
Yeah.
And they're not winning for a while. And then they're like, I don't like my job. And so people then attack that phase 6 months, a year in, whatever your ramp period is, as opposed to going, wait a second, why didn't we look at onboarding? Because the surveys are great. People love the onboarding. Okay, did the surveys say they love the onboarding? Or the surveys basically saying, hey, they're just happy that they're at their job and they're not at their old shitty job that they hated. And so like that to me is the first step, is to recognize how important onboarding is, and that even though it doesn't look like a red light problem area, it probably is if you're not maniacally focused on making it great.
I love that point. And I think one of the things, if I look at our onboarding from when I came on to Abstract to now, there's like a couple key elements that you need to look at. I'd say the first one is time frame. How long are you going to invest in training somebody before they go live? And I feel like there's two, we do 2 weeks here. At one point we did, I think, 4 or 5 days, and it was a little bit quicker. 2 weeks has been the longest we've done, just because it's kind of the nature of our business and how quickly that we need the people to be live and performing. I see two issues when I look at other companies. One is like trial by fire,
mm-hmm.
right? You're going to come in, we're not going to have any little real formal training, and you're just going to shadow. So your training is as good as the person that you got stuck with to see how they do the job. And majority of the time, the person training them is not training them the way that the company feels like their training should go. So I think in a lot of cases, a business is going to have to make the choice, all right, we're going to invest in our onboarding, and we're going to invest by putting people over it and having that expense. And then we're also going to invest in making it a substantial enough time frame to learn. I do think you can go the other way too. You can have somebody in a classroom for a month or 6 weeks, especially when it comes to sales training, where they know everything about sales other than how to sell, because they've just been in a classroom learning about it. And I think that time frame, it was a difficult decision for, it was an investment. If you think about the number of people we bring on, paying all those people an extra 6-7 days, but it's worth it.
You know what I'm thinking about as I'm hearing you guys talk, the other things that people probably don't think about, like vision, like somebody's joined, like Jeff, you said that they're in the honeymoon phase, they join the organization, they're loving it, they're open, their guards down, right? What a perfect opportunity to make sure that they understand where we're going, why we do it, what's ahead, what opportunities lie ahead for them. Really get them to understand that. So when they're in the difficult phase of the first couple of months of learning how to do the job, and maybe they're not feeling as successful yet, you know, you get those people through that first phase by making sure that they understand the importance of the work and where the company's going and how they tie into it and their opportunities for growth. And I think a lot of times, even if somebody does have onboarding, that they fail in that area. Like, this is a new member of the tribe. And yeah, you're teaching them how to do the job, but what if they don't like that job ultimately forever? You still want that really good, talented person to stay in the mix, maybe playing another role. They have to understand where you're going, the company, the opportunity. I think that's missed a lot.
That's such a good point. And if you think about someone with vision and someone without. So if you don't have vision and something bad happens, say your manager, you don't like your manager, or someone gives you bad feedback, whatever it may be, that seems so much worse if you don't have this like long-term vision of where you want to go. If you have the long-term vision, it's just a pothole,
yep,
a little obstacle in the way. But if you don't, it's like, oh, this huge mountain, like this is, I can't even do this.
Yep.
I completely agree. I think And even maybe if you even zoom that out, that's culture. Like part of culture probably is vision. And it's so easy to not do culture in onboarding or to let it be 45 minutes if somebody comes in during lunch and it's like, yep, you know, our culture is accountability and you know, pass the taco salad. It's like, that's not getting, you don't want, I think a couple of points. First, to go back to what Eric said, shadowing is not onboarding. Shadowing is not training. Mm-hmm. And everyone should hear that because I know we did it forever. Like, how do you onboard? Amy's the best ex at the company. Go watch Amy. And then you'll be able to just be Amy. Like, that's a great idea. Let's just do that all the time. And so at the company, what we had was we had Amy sitting at her desk and six people watching Amy do Amy's job. And there's all sorts of reasons why that's wrong. But like, it can be a component of the onboarding. It can't be onboarding. Two is culture. You must ensure that people aren't just fitting in, that they are adding to the culture. And I think that little turn of a word is meaningful. They have to make the culture even better. That is part of their job here, is to make the culture even better. And I think it's so easy to skip over that and say, well, the culture is, you know, Brian and I started the business back in the 80s and, you know, a couple of guys from Duluth or whatever. And that's not culture. Culture is the expectation of how people behave in this business, how you treat other people in this business. What are the norms that go on in this business? And if you don't explicitly tell people that, they won't know and they won't add to the culture and they won't adhere to the unwritten rules of what goes on in the business.
And this is such a good point because you're looking at, you know, the culture really ties in, I would call it the intangible piece of the job.
Yeah.
Versus the tangible, the X's and O's, this is how you do the job. I'm reading a book called The Happiness Advantage, and they talk about a commercial cleaning company. And they take one group of employees in training, and they tell them, hey, this is the job, go do it. And then they take the other group, and they say, hey, I just want you to know how good this is for your health. Like, based on the number of steps that you have in a day and the activities that you're doing, you're really burning X amount of calories, and we're going to track this for you, and you're just making yourself a healthier individual. Same job, the group that thought they were doing something, not thought, that were doing something with more intent and reason, way outperformed, had higher retention. And I think like part of this culture piece is in that training above the job. Like, yes, this is the job, this is what you need to do, but training the mindset, this is the approach, this is why it's so important, this is what it's going to get you in the future, this is why it's worth those tough days, here's how to deal with those tough days, and here's why you're going to be so much better in doing that. I think that's a huge piece.
You know, what else I think is missed is follow-up. So somebody does a week or 2 weeks, then they're out in the field or they're doing their thing. And a lot of times there's not a part of the onboarding process where, or another part of the team that all of a sudden takes them from their second week completed to maybe 3 weeks through 10 weeks, you know, to now implement what they learned, right? So a lot of onboarding is thought and process, procedure. But then there isn't a lot of times somebody that's there to make sure that they know how to implement all that knowledge. We learn that, right? That's why we've got this second team that works with people in their first 90 days out of onboarding. So I think there's probably people out there that have some pretty good training when people come in and not the follow-up to make sure to help implement.
That's a great point. I didn't even think of that. Yeah, and that's been a huge advantage for us in making sure what doesn't happen is like someone goes and shadows Amy and they end up doing it exactly opposite of how you trained on it. So it provides that consistency of your experience.
And what has to be true in order for Scott to be able to say that is you must have been measuring how long it takes people to onboard and ramp to a point of effectiveness, or that we need a longer time to ramp to the point of effectiveness. And one thing that shouldn't be lost on people is the importance of measuring how long it takes to get someone to the point of full productivity. Because maybe at a smaller size business, it's you have like a kind of an understanding. As you start to get bigger, as you get to 50, 100 million, 250 million, like those things start to matter for resource planning, for capacity planning. Okay, it takes our sales rep, for example, on average 90 days to get to 15,000 a month in quota attainment. Okay, well now that's really important because I can then look at, okay, my next year's quota is X, so I need to hire Y number of people over the coming months. But next, like, wait a minute, let's not make it 90 days. Can we make it 60? I mean, Eric, you alluded to it earlier. We thought it was so many business days and then it went to 2 weeks. How can we continue to shorten the cycle? Because that it's so easy to not measure onboarding and training people on necessarily like tangible metrics. Measure them on soft stuff, but how quickly are we getting people fully ramped? And then how are we improving the time it takes to get fully ramped?
This has been the biggest help to our organization. We put results on our training. We put average points. We put retention of new hires. So we're stubborn on the results and we're flexible on the details of how to get those results. Or I think you have companies that are like, oh, I ran them through the training program. Like they're trained. They passed. They went through the training program. But they're not tracking the performance. And more than just tracking the performance is putting, like, does your training department feel ownership over those numbers? Do they have to present those numbers? Do they talk about them weekly? Like our training department, like if our numbers aren't right, they don't feel good. Like they're trying to work to improve however they can do that.
You know, I think something else we learned along the way was it's not good enough. Well, first of all, we'd started like we're talking with some of the things we're saying not to do, right? We got people in a room maybe, or we had them shadow, or we went to having a pretty tight agenda, like in the next week we want to go over these 12 things. But in order to be successful, I think, in training ongoing and making sure that people are learning the same way and operating the same way, is to make sure that all of these processes are documented. You know, yep. we've really put a lot of time, money, and energy behind documenting all of our processes so that we can make sure people are doing things the same way, and that's why we've been able to scale. But I don't think we talk enough about how getting all those processes documented has made it that much easier to train people.
Yeah, for context, every hour of our two-week training is scheduled, and every hour has either a assigned like workbook where people are filling it out for engagement throughout. And then it also has a training guide. So if you're running the course, you know how you should be running the session. I overlooked that. And that's a huge part. It's probably a huge part of why we won the award, and a huge part of like having a world-class training is like, it needs to be detailed out.
In addition to that, if there is a way to log a new prospect or a way to put people into a particular stage, that's fully documented so that when somebody goes and does that part of the process, they do it the same way every time. We train it the same way every time. So yeah, not only documenting and having manuals throughout the training and exercises and things like that, but the people are learning processes. Like it may be, I don't know, how to go out and do a bid, or which you don't want all your new people that go out and do bids on huge roofs where, you know, mistakes could cause profit issues. You want them to go out and go follow the same bid process all the time. And the way you're going to be able to train that, and the way you're going to be able to get people doing the same thing, is having that exact bid process documented, all of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Well, yeah, not only does it make sense, but think about this. Like, if you don't have that, then who knows how to do it? Like, Larry knows how to do it.
Then he leaves.
And Larry leaves. Yeah, Larry might, I know you love Larry. Larry comes over to your house and your buddies. Larry might get a different job. And you if you're out there, you've felt this, or you will feel this, or luckily you haven't. But it's like, uh-oh, we've got real danger. Larry's gone. We need to get everything Larry knows out of Larry's head right now, because he's got 2 weeks to tell us everything he knows, because he's taught every adjuster or bidder or salesperson or account manager or whatever how to do their entire job. It's all in Larry's head. Any of your divisions, processes are in somebody's head. Just know the next evolution is get those down. even if it's, and Scott, you made the point, and it's the best point, and I didn't do this, and I had five Larrys, and I bit me in the ass because they did leave. Don't do that. Get your processes down. It is worth it. It is smart, and you can't onboard without it, but the continuity of business and customer excellence can't happen unless you have really well-documented processes, which I hate, but I understand is important.
I bet there are people that are out there that have somebody that's really good at training new hires, and I wasn't thinking about that. Well, first of all, they don't have it down. They don't have it documented. It's tribal knowledge in the head of the trainer, mm-hmm. not even the person that's good at doing the bids, but the person that's training them on the way in. That person leaves or retires or moves into a different job. Who's training the new hires? Where's the documentation? How do we do it? What's the flow? It's all lost.
It's like you got to call Larry on your day. Like, hey, Larry, can you talk to us at 6? Because we forgot.
You got to get the tribal knowledge on paper now.
Yeah.
There should be no tribal knowledge. You should you should work to eliminate it.
That's a great point.
Question. Do you have to have done the job to train on the job or to onboard people to do the job?
I would say if at all possible, do it. It always helps. It's never going to hurt you if you've done the job before. But I trained people how to set appointments before I knew how to set appointments. Like I think the right person who's good at training, and if your program's good, can do the job. But it's always going to be a benefit if.
So I'm gonna pile onto this. Think about the professor at college that's teaching your business class that's been in business for 20 years. Yep. I don't know. I'm listening to that person a little bit more. They have real world experiences. You know, your college professors that actually have the experience as well and they're teaching the content are just that much better. But I don't think they have to be the best.
That's a good point.
Like if they're training salespeople, yeah. they didn't have to be the best salesperson. A lot of people make that mistake, whether it's putting the best salesperson in training or putting them as a manager. A lot of times that best salesperson isn't the best at that. But you do have to understand, you have to have walked in the shoes, I think, to get the respect and the be able to talk,
especially in sales. I think sales training is maybe different. Like there may be other trainings, but even Tiger Woods has a swing coach.
I want to double click on sales onboarding. I think we're the grow show. You're probably not doing all that much growing if you're not onboarding salespeople. I want to double, because I agree with what Eric said. I think it's a different thing. And also, you know, taking advice from a previous episode, I'm in on salesperson onboarding right now, and I'm telling you. A couple of things that I'm noticing and doing that I think are working, and I'm sure there's a lot that isn't, but I think having the pitch written out word for word and then sort of demanding this level of test out, particularly from salespeople, and giving them the space to like rigorously practice. I think there is a tendency in sales to make it more of an art than it needs to be. Like at first, it can be an art, but at first it's a science. Like I don't need you to go outside and color outside the box initially. When you become advanced, you can. But with sales onboarding in particularly, script, rigid, practice it. Your sales, you will be shocked at how good they can get, how fast they can get there.
Art within a science is what I always like to say. Like the science is there. You can get creative within the script, like on your tone and how you present it. But it's like, that's the script.
Yeah.
Like, We're within that box.
I'm going to give you a quick framework here. It's cognitive, emotional, and physical mastery. And I'm stealing this. Maybe Tony Robbins, I forget who. Cognitive mastery is I know the words. Emotional mastery is I know the words well enough where I can change my tonality. And physical mastery is I can do this so well. I could do something else and do this perfectly. Like use that for your salespeople. Cognitive mastery, get them to say the words. Emotional mastery, get them to the tone. Then get it so they can make pancakes and do a sales pitch. Like we have one sales guy.
Pancake mix.
I want to call out my guy Tony. Like he could be doing four things. He could be mowing the lawn, playing a video game, and do the sales pitch. And it doesn't even. It's like he's using 5% of his brain to do it. It's like a guy that dialed in that well.
I used to do it in the shower, literally every morning when I was selling. I did a pitch in the shower every morning to the wall, same every day. You know, it's interesting. this goes years and years back, but we've added dozens and dozens of salespeople to teams, and it's why we grew. But the only thing that was in the first week was a sales pitch. It was word for word, and they literally had to know it word for word by the end of the week, and then we'd have them pitch our existing sales team and do contests, and you know, the existing sales team would pound on them. But you know, and then over time they learned how to add their own stories, but you had to know the pitch word for word by the end of the week, period.
1 week.
Yeah. That,
yeah,
that particular piece of sales training in the past. But it worked. People were successful because before they knew the ins and outs of the product and had a bunch of knowledge about the organization, like they knew that. Like to the person that was sitting on the outside listening to them, it was a great pitch. Like it's
in that you just said it, like it worked for to make them successful, and then they stay. If you are successful, the whole point of training is to make them successful as quick as possible. You don't lose people who are successful. People love being successful and achieving and feeling like they're growing and developing. And like that's one element of what we do is we send out the rankings every day. Every day an email goes out to all of our new hires and all the important statistics. And it's something we pulled back that we did in the past that we didn't do before. And people love seeing their name on the leaderboard in green. Like there's got to be some level of competition in your training, I feel like.
I like that. And look, like success is a byproduct of expectation. So we got to be realistic with our onboarding people. And like, I love how you all do it. You're competing against other people in your class. Some of the things are totally within your control. But if you come in and you say, hey, Mr. and Mrs. New Salesperson, we're really excited. Your quota is 30 grand. You know, you're going to close 10 deals in your second month and it's going to be awesome. If that person doesn't, then they're way behind and they're upset because they're not winning. Like Eric, you said it, I'd say it just a smidge different. It's like the goal of onboarding is to get people winning, and you're only going to win if the onboarding team sets the expectations right.
Sure. That's a great point.
And then the training's never over.
Never over.
Let's talk about that. This company, like the frameworks that you all have set up, I think are really novel.
It's one of the major pillars of our culture. We make sure people have at least an hour every week forever. You know, 52 hours minimum of continuing education on the job, about the company, industries, processes, just so somebody's always growing. And that helps us retain people longer and helps them become successful. We're a better company because of training. That's like if there was a top five, training is one of them.
And it's interesting, right? I was listening to a podcast with the CEO of ZoomInfo, and he was like, you know, I was talking to my leadership team, and I was like, what do people care about these days? Like, why do they come here? Why do they stay here? And people would say, work-life balance, DEI initiatives. They want to support the environment. And he was like, I don't know. I just kind of think like those things are important, but I don't think that's why they come here every day. Like, why do they come here? So he just went, and I may be paraphrasing this a little bit, met with a ton of individuals in the company. Why'd you come? Why are you staying? 99% of them were for growth and development. I am here to develop. All that stuff is great, but that doesn't mean anything if I'm not here developing and growing every day. So if you're listening to this podcast and you feel like training and development is on the back burner for your organization, fix it like ASAP. If you want to grow a growing company, the only way you do that is if you can promote people and have people come in, develop to do the job.
I think that's a really important point. And two quick stats and then a question. So nearly 2/3 of employees get no workplace training at all. And 3/4 feel like they're not reaching their full potential due to the lack of the training opportunities. So like this is a problem. But what I noticed as an outsider coming into this organization is that the problem that you all solved was training always goes to the back burner in lieu of other more pressing, urgent priorities constantly. That constantly happens. And you all forced it across every manager, every individual contributor, every VP. I guess I'm curious, like, what was the problem? And then maybe share with folks out there how you solved it.
I'll tell you how, Scott. I mean, it's weekly best practices is a common term. It's in every position now, every single week. It wasn't a thing. Like, we didn't do it. And Scott was like, we need to, we have so many young leaders in the building. We have to get them some ongoing development. Why don't we do, we'll call it best practices. Mm-hmm. We'll do it weekly and we'll make sure that they are getting what they need to continue to get better in their role. So just something like that then turned into, it was for sales managers, then it went to account managers, then it went to sales reps, then it went to operations specialists, and like that theme spread out. And then with our maps, you can listen to the map episode. It's our way, it's really our way of a business of making sure certain things get done every week. We added it as a project because that is, it's one of the top five. So why wouldn't it be one of the things they're responsible for every week? Those were two simple ways we did it.
Jeff, you're gonna think I'm crazy. Eric can back me up on this because he's seen it. So can any salespeople that I've worked with. I'll walk in for training in a room full of salespeople and someone's still on the phone and I'll tell them to get off the phone in the middle of a pitch. Like, because they know when training is. It's on their schedule and somebody always, you know, there's always one that figures out how to not plan their schedule and how to have something going on during training. And I tell people to get off the phone and it pisses them off. But like them developing, I mean, time management's a whole nother thing we could talk about, right? But them and their development, ongoing professional development, I think it needs to be more important than anything else. And that one call that they might have been on is less important than what they're going to learn in the next hour so that they can be more impactful on the next five calls they're on.
Yeah, I think for people out there, it's one thing to say we want to train, we want to get better, let's be about training. It's another thing to put in place the structures and mechanisms to force it to happen, and then maybe more than that, penalize when it doesn't happen. So, for instance, in this business, and these are just things that have worked for us. Take them, leave them, do nothing. But in this business, there are 15 priorities of this business. Training is one of those 15, and probably if you had to narrow it, it would be one of a smaller list. Second, it's really hard to get promoted as an individual contributor if you don't do 52 hours of training a year.
It just reminded me of the whole thing we do internally here, which is fun, and the tracking of the points and people earning belts and the ability to get to a black belt. And,
right.
You know, giving people different prizes and certifications and things like that because of the training that they're completing, making them eligible for other roles because they've finished certain training classes. That's a big deal.
Well, we had a great episode today on training. Proud of the team on the award. We gave you a little bit of insight on how we did it. Jeff, what were some of your key takeaways from today?
Well, I'm excited to, this feels like an episode of like, well, why the fuck should we, like, you should, like, this feels like, hey, we just got this. It was timely. So I'm happy about that. My key takeaway from today is I go back to shadowing. I just think there's so much shadowing going on. Shadowing is not training. Shadowing is not onboarding. It's just a part of it.
Yeah. I'd say make sure in your onboarding that you are getting people bought into the vision, not just training them on the job. Have all of the things that you're trying to get somebody to understand and know and learn, have those things documented. And then have check-ins, you know, along the way to make sure that they're implementing the training and in the right way would be my key points.
And the only thing I would add is if you don't already have very clear, tangible results on your training department, and stretch them, like give them a high goal to live up to and hold them accountable to reaching that goal. Because in order to do that, they're going to have to work hand in hand with the management of wherever their trainees are going. And the other thing is be intentional with your training. Schedule it out hour by hour. What are we training on? What's the goal of the training? What do we want our people to get out of it? You do those things, I think you'll be in a better spot.
You know what else you learned today? When my kid grows up, he wants to be pancake mix.
Pancake mix. You brought it back. You missed. I called it a callback.
It's a callback.
You said pancake something. earlier.
Pancake mix.
Which kind? Does he have a favorite? Bisquick?
Always be growing.
Always be growing.
Always be growing.
Thanks for listening to The Grow Show. Leave us a review and let us know how we're doing, or if there's a topic you'd like us to cover in the future.
The Grow Show is sponsored by Sapper Consulting. Let us schedule your sales appointments so you don't have to.